The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Over a week after Turkey's most devastating earthquake in a century, and the search for survivors is slowly coming to an end. Now the question remains, how do these countries handle the hundreds of thousands left homeless and jobless in its wake? More than 158,000 people have left the quake zone in southern Turkey.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, I am actually stunned today. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. It's good to be back here with you again. Stunned by the numbers. Every day I look at these numbers and I think, wow, you know, first it was 3,100, crept up into 13,000, 19,000, 20 some thousand. Yesterday I was talking about 35,000, right? The death toll resulting from those earthquakes in Turkey and Syria is now above 41,000. 41,000 souls, 41,000 lives. Can you imagine the ripple effect losing your spouse, your child, your parent? It's hard, your sibling. 41,000 people have lost their lives. I can't imagine how many people today mourn. Turkey has borne the brunt of this quake, more than 35,000 dead in Turkey. 8,000 survivors have been found since the earthquake hit, but fewer are being found as time goes on, and that's understandable. Some are saying it's now become a recovery operation, more so than a rescue operation. A million people in Turkey have lost their homes. And complicating the situation for Syria is that the area that was hit is held by rebels against the Syrian government, and they only just allowed an aid convoy to come in today. So, and we've got civil unrest, we've got war, we've got earthquakes. We have even lawsuits. Now, a lot of people are saying these buildings were not built up to what should have been code. A lot of people lost their lives. There's even talks of suing, those who were involved in the construction end of this stuff. You know, a little later in the week, I think I'll talk just about earthquakes. I mean, we in the States are not immune. They expect a major earthquake on the West Coast. You know, the San Andreas Fault runs all the way down that state of California. A lot of populated area. And they say within 30 years we should have, I think the number I heard was over 6 point something on the Richter scale. It's a pretty significant quake. Of course, if you live in the Chicago area, the Midwest, you've got the New Madrid Fault. And I'd love to tell you about what happened about 100 years ago in that area. Right now, there are strange lights, luminosities, aerial phenomena being seen, being reported above the areas where these quakes took place. Strange luminous clouds and flashes in the sky. There's no broad consensus as to the cause of that phenomenon. But there are some theories. And maybe later in the week, maybe I'll share a little bit of this. I have spoken to many different mystics in my lifetime. I've spoken to seismologists, geologists. There is such a thing called as an earthquake swarm, too. Seismic storms. And sometimes one quake can trigger a series of these other quakes. So maybe there's a buildup right now. We may see more of this. And not to get too apocalyptic here, but I kind of zoom out a little bit and I think about what Scripture says about war, right? We're seeing that in the world today. Wars and rumors of wars. Strange signs in the sky. I mean, we've had signs in the sky, comets and meteors that we haven't seen in a million years. And you won't see again for a million years come by. Some of the closest objects passing by us just recently. There's the earth quaking and trembling all over. There's drought and famine and strange disease. Gives us pause. I think, you know, these are opportunities for us to say, hey, I'm finite. I'm not in control. God is control. And hopefully we can take the blinders off our eyes. The scales, maybe, is a better way of looking at it. And look at the author of all things and ask for mercy. Turn to him. Ask for his mercy in these turbulent times. But, you know, we can talk more about this. I'll fill you in on some of what might be coming, what has been prophesied and some other things. We'll do that later in the week. We got a full show today. It's St. Valentine's Day. I don't want to bring you down, right? You leave with such heavy news. But I just saw the number as I was walking in the studio, 41,000 people dead. That's tragic. Say the Chaplet of Divine Mercy for those souls. All right, for those who were still to die, for those who've gone before us. We'll do that in about an hour. We'll pray the chaplet. A lot going on here in the country as well. White House spokesperson or spokeswoman, Karine Jean-Pierre, you know, she told journalists last week that Joe Biden, despite his age and the kind of haphazard way the administration is being run, President Biden's going to run. He is running for re-election. I saw a clip from her last night where she says, well, what I can say, again, because of the Hatch Act, you know, she keeps bringing that up, is what the president said many times, and that is he intends to run. He intends to run. Most Americans probably don't want to see another Biden-Trump showdown. How do you feel about that? You want another Trump-Biden showdown? Have your attitudes changed? Are you saying, yeah, let's do it? Or are you like, oh, my gosh, let's get some new blood, right? Let's get a different approach. This morning, former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, she threw her hat, and we knew that, though, right? I mean, she gave all the signs in advance that she's going to be running. And she'll be running up against Donald Trump for the Republican nomination. She is the first Republican to throw her hat in the ring since Trump made his announcement. There are going to be many others in the coming days. Will Governor DeSantis run on the Republican side of the ticket? What about Tim Scott? What about some of these others? I think it'll be an interesting mix-up. And if you think about it, we're in, what, 2023 right now? November of 2024, you'll be voting for the president. You know how things are as we get closer. Whew. It's going to get heavy in terms of the world of politics. So just putting that on your radar, new political development. Looks like Joe Biden's running. Looks like President Trump is going to run. Looks like Nikki Haley is in the mix. More to come. I'll fill you in on that as the news develops. Hey, police in the UK, and this is an interesting story. Two stories I want to share with you. Something that happened in Nicaragua and something that happened in the United Kingdom. Police in the United Kingdom have arrested a Catholic priest. You know what his crime was? I don't know if you heard the story or not. Sometimes we, on this side of the pond, as I say, we don't necessarily get a whole lot of international news like this. There was a Catholic priest who was arrested for silently praying in front of an abortion clinic. That was his crime. Silently. There's no signs, no placards, no loud voice. Just praying against this demonic spirit, this evil. He's the third person to be arrested for those type of offenses, if that's what you call it. I don't call it an offense. I call it a duty. I think we should all be doing that. And I have to take the giant plank out of my own eye before I point my finger or take the speck out of anybody else's. I should be doing more. I think every one of us, as Catholics, as defenders of life, as great citizens of this country, we should be outside of these abortion mills praying and sacrificing and asking God for mercy. We can sit back and look at this and say, oh, it's so horrible. But I commend those who are on the front lines. I commend this Catholic priest. I commend Mark Hoke. I commend those who are willing to give up their day, their time, and to walk. I've got a friend, he and his wife, they're always outside of these clinics praying, and they take the late shift. They pray the rosary outside of it. This priest, by the way, was holding a sign that read, praying for free speech, because two other people have been arrested in recent weeks, and one of them was exonerated by a jury of her peers. The other one's still waiting for trial, but Father Sean Gao, I think is his name, was allowed to go, but told that the charges could be reinstated if he reoffends. So he's going to pursue the charges, though, fully clear his name. Down south in Nicaragua, a different situation. And we talk about the time in which we live in. As an American man, I am so glad I'm American, so glad that we have freedom. We have our First Amendment, right? Freedom of speech, the freedom of religion. Down in Nicaragua, Bishop Rolando Alvarez, he has been guilty of supposedly inciting violence. That's the charge that's been trumped up against him. He's been sentenced to a quarter of a century in prison. Actually, more than that, 26 years in prison. He'll probably die there. He had spoken out in support of one of his priests, and because he did that, he was detained for broadcasting the gospel via radio and refusing to hand over the radio equipment. And the bishop was given the opportunity to go into exile in the United States, along with more than 200 other political prisoners who are now being deported. But he refused. I sit back, I hear the story, and I'm thinking, what would you do? I'm not that courageous of a man. I mean, I wish I was, and I think maybe in those circumstances, God gives you grace. 26 years in a Nicaraguan prison? Are you kidding me? Or go in exile to the U.S.? I don't know. Sources are saying that in Nicaragua, he has you know, perdured in faith and hope. And this is just extraordinary, really, in joy. He's been a witness. You know, his sacrifice, his willingness to give up freedom is a form of martyrdom. And I think a lot of conversion is going to come as a result of this. You know, among those political prisoners who are being sent into exile, you know, there's four or five priests, the deacons, some seminarians, and organists. The Bishop of Miami, Archbishop Thomas Wensky, he says he's going to take them. He'll take them all. He'll house them at his own seminary. And he's, you know, already hosting an exiled auxiliary bishop from Managua. So thank you, Your Excellency. Very grateful for what you're doing there. Let's pray for our brothers and sisters in the faith who are suffering. And I challenge you to be bold in your faith. Here's a bishop willing to go to prison, perhaps the rest of his life. And believe me, it's not a U.S. prison. It's a Nicaraguan prison, right? What are you doing to be a witness for Christ? What are you doing to sacrifice? Are you financially helping? Are you praying? Are you volunteering? What are you doing? I don't know. I mean, I know I can always do more. I just throw that in front of you. Something to think about and pray about. Lent is right around the corner. As at times like this, we can say, okay, I'm going to visit prisons. You know, I'm going to have a prison ministry. I'm going to go outside of that abortion clinic, and I'm going to pray the rosary. Or I'm going to do an hour of adoration for this particular cause once a week or once a day. You know, there's a lot you can do. So God challenges you. As you hear these opportunities, maybe something's put on your radar before you that you never thought of before. Could be the Holy Spirit at work saying, okay, you know what? I'm going to have a family rosary with my family. Or I'm going to join Drew every afternoon for the chaplet and pray for these causes. Or you know what? I'm going to give a little bit more. I'm going to give to those mothers in need. You know, there's lots of ways that we can help. Lots of ways that we can help. So think about that, okay? Coming up in just a minute, I want to talk about romance scams. It is Valentine's Day. And I was reading a New York Times article about how the elderly, those 60 and older, are being targeted. So you might say, well, that's not my demo, Drew. Well, it might be somebody you know, your aunt, your uncle, your mom, your dad. Tell you what you can do to help. Maybe you are in that area. I'm going to help you identify some signs. But we'll just look at romance scams in general, everything from catfishing to, you know, being conned out of your money. So there's a lot coming up here in a minute. Before I do that, though, I just want to give you kind of a final call. Nativity Pilgrimage had reached out to me recently, and they said, hey, just want to let you know, the trip is getting pretty full, and we might have to shut it off soon. So I want to put that on your radar. If you thought about going to Italy with me, you want to take that pilgrimage, I really encourage you to go to relevantradio.com/Italy and join me on what is going to be a Eucharistic revival pilgrimage, a pilgrimage of Eucharistic revival. We are in this three-year window. I think God wants to give extraordinary grace. I think on this trip, you know, Italy is a country so filled with Eucharistic miracles. It's amazing. One of the most magnificent of all the Eucharistic miracles I've ever seen is Lanciano, Italy, where, you know, 1,200 years ago, a host turned into human flesh. And scientists, when they did research recently, found that it was a part of heart tissue, a piece of myocardium. It looked like it was cut with a laser, and yet it defied not just the months, the years, not just the centuries. It still is there today. Just unbelievable science behind this. You'll get it all. In fact, I'm going to give some talks on this trip about Eucharistic miracles. I want to talk about the stigmata, about Padre Pio, who we'll visit, and a lot of the other great places we'll go to, too. I'll tell you more about it coming up. I just want to give you that heads up. Do yourself a favor. Go to relevantradio.com/Italy. Get all the details. And if you have questions or you want more details, I don't know how thorough that particular site is in terms of description, call Nativity Pilgrimage. Say, hey, I'm curious about going with Drew. Can you get me on the list? And you know, give me some details about, you know, what we're doing. There's a brochure you can download. And if you've never been to Italy, it'll be an extraordinary experience. If you've been there before, like I've been there many, many times, you always learn something new. So I'll remind you again, because I know, look, I don't want you to miss it. It's September, and it gives you a little bit of time to save and to plan. So think about it, okay, if you're going to come. Hey, happy Valentine's Day, too. I forgot to say that to you when I began the broadcast. Great Saint Valentine, right? The day which we associate with love and romance. I was catching some local morning news and was seeing everything from, you know, chocolates and flowers and what people are doing and restaurants and reservations. This is a tough day for some people, though, too. you know, somebody who doesn't have somebody in their life, it can kind of be awkward. There are people out there who are looking also to take advantage of these holidays. And this really upsets me. You know, this is a perfect opportunity to scam people. You know, somebody longing for love, looking for a relationship. You know, these scammers, they go out. And maybe this time of year, saying, well, I'm going to give it another chance, right? And you're going on one of the apps. These scammers haunt those dating apps. And they're looking for that lonely heart because you're vulnerable, right? You want to believe what you see. And when they find somebody, they chat them up. And they put their hooks into their heart. And next thing you know, they con them. They con them out of all of their money. Unfortunately, all too many people fall from these scams. The estimates that I saw, there are losses anywhere from $550 million. Get a load of this number. All the way up to $1.3 billion. $1.3 billion Americans are scammed out of. So the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, it came up with... one of the numbers I saw, they came up with the highest amount based on the reports. 70,000 people, 70,000. Think of a stadium full of people are losing an average of $4,400. So when people are lonely, they're looking for a relationship, it's very easy to fall prey to these lures. And there's something called catfishing, where the scam artist makes, you know, a completely different online persona and can lure you in. I mean, there's actually, Maggie, did you ever see that show? I think it was on MTV or something. It's called Catfish.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I know people that have, like, been on dating apps, and they're like, I'm pretty sure that this is a fake person.
The quarterback for Notre Dame, Lauren, our engineer here, was telling me, got catfished.
No way.
There was a dude who ended up acting like it was his girlfriend. And yeah, it was really creepy. And, you know, she told me the whole story.
You've got too much time on your hands if you're trying. Ugh.
Yeah, well, what are you doing?
I don't know.
Find real love, right? Find some happiness, right? Anyway, I've invited Melanie McGovern to join me today. She's Director of Public Relations and Social Media for the International Association of Better Business Bureaus. And you can find them online if you want to check them out at BBB.org. BBB.org. Pretty simple to remember, right? And we'll answer your questions and hopefully some of your concerns as well. Maybe just safeguard you from falling into these traps. Because it's not just the young, it's also the elderly that fall prey. A lot of people are in there. Hey, Melanie, welcome back. So good to have you here today.
Thank you.
So, you know, let's talk a little bit about, you know, because I guess, you know, when you think about online dating, I think of a different generation, right? You got your Bumble, your Tinder, and all these things, but that's not really the case. These scams, they really affect everybody, don't they? What are the most common scams, and how prolific are they?
Well, it's definitely, you know, the romance scam. You're on an app, you meet somebody. There's a lot of red flags. You know, number one, is this person just a little too good looking, you know, for the parameters you put in or for you personally. You know, that's always one of those things. And, you know, it's easy to just, you can just right click on a pic if you're on a laptop or a desktop, and you can Google image search and see if that person pops up anywhere else.
Right.
You know, if you have that concern. You know, I've seen a bunch of videos on social media where people will engage with the scammers. And they're always like, what's your, you know, do you have WhatsApp? Do you have a different messaging app? And they're very quick to get you off of whatever site you're on. They want to take it off that site because then they can start asking you for money or whatever they're asking for. You know, and the biggest thing with the catfish is they're moving fast. They want to hook you, you know, the fishing. They want to hook you in, make you start to have feelings. And then, you know, they'll start asking you about money. You'll say something like, well, let's meet first. And they'll say, no, I can't. I'm overseas on a job, or I'm in a different state. You know, they make a lot of excuses to not meet. And then they'll start, once you're on the hook, they'll start giving you those hard luck stories. Yeah. Oh, I don't have any money. I can't get to you. So those are just the major red flags.
So
definitely if you're online dating.
Let me ask you about age, too, because, you know, okay, somebody who's young can get catfished pretty easily, and there can be all sorts of reasons for it. I feel bad for the elderly, you know, kind of new to this. They go online, they use these apps, and these scammers, they're very patient. they'll work you for quite a while, especially if they think they have somebody who can benefit them. And I know one of the things they often do, there's there's gift cards, there's there's money transfers, there's all these different type of things. Are the scams becoming more sophisticated? And who's the more vulnerable population? Is it the elderly now? And when I say elderly, I don't mean old. It could be anybody from 55 to, you know, whatever age they decide to date, 60 and over.
Yeah, it's actually all age groups. The biggest thing with romance scams, and I heard you talking about the numbers from the FTC, and, you know, we have numbers as well from our scam tracker on BBB.org. Romance scams are very underreported because people are ashamed, embarrassed. Yeah. They don't want people to know what's going on. But in terms of who's falling for it, it's honestly anybody, but we do see older people targeted because they have a nest egg. Yeah. They have more money. They're a lot more trusting. So it's good to have that conversation. If you have, you know, like I have a single mother, she's not single, mm-hmm. but you know, if right. she were, when she was, I said to her, be careful with the dating apps because you don't know who's on the other end.
Yeah, so true. So what do you do? Let's talk about what happens if you are online and you kind of fall for this. Are there a recourse? I mean, you know, what can you do if you've been duped or you are suspicious that I might be being played?
Well, the first thing is everybody has to remember this. I can't reiterate it enough. If someone's asking you for money, don't send it. Terminate the contact. You know, once they start asking for money or personal information, that could lead to identity theft. If they're asking you to pay with one of the peer-to-peer payment apps, a lot of times you can't get that money back. So, you know, again, if they're asking you for money, just don't send it. If you do find yourself a victim of this scam, you definitely want to report it to us at the Better Business Bureau and the FTC and even the FBI. If it's a cybercrime, the FBI needs to know about it as well. So there's a lot of places you can report it. In terms of getting your money back, though, a lot of times what we see is that people just don't get their money back. And it's a shame. I mean, I've seen stories, I've heard podcasts, I've seen news reports, people losing hundreds of thousands of dollars in romance scams because they want to believe it's real.
I know. Yeah, I've heard retirees are losing their life savings to romance scams. I was reading about one woman in the New York Times earlier who unfortunately fell for this and got cleaned out. I sit back and I wonder, okay, you know, a lot of times when this money is transferred or whatever, you'll never get it back, to your point. But can any of the dating apps or any of these platforms be held liable for allowing this practice to take place?
That's where they get you. They move you off of that dating app and you start communicating off of that app.
Yeah, then you're done.
Then you're done.
Yeah,
so that's why until you're ready to meet somebody or you can confirm that they are, in fact, a real person, it's best to stay on that app. You have a little bit of protection there, but the scammers are smart. They know, like, get the person off the app, get them talking somewhere else.
So I only have a few minutes, but I'm curious for those who are listening as well, in terms of romance scams, this is Valentine's Day. What are the top few, the top two, three, that people should be on the lookout for?
The tips to spot the romance scam?
Yeah.
Oh, that would be definitely great. Number one is they're really in a hurry. They say, I love you, really quickly. Start planning a future. Well, here's the other number two. They don't want to meet you in person. So they'll make up excuses as to why they can't. And then they'll start, you know, with their hard luck stories, asking you for money, you know, saying that their car got stolen, their kid is sick, they have a sick relative, they're overseas and their wallet got stolen. I could rattle off a million different excuses that they use. But, you know, definitely those are the types of things. And number one, I mean, I'll be completely honest. I met my husband on a website. 3 days after we were talking, we met, and that was 12 years ago.
Oh, wow, great. That's
so, you
awesome.
Know, if somebody wants to meet you right away and things like that, you know, hey, if they're local and you can confirm they're a real person, absolutely. It's a great way to meet somebody. But again, if they don't want a video chat, they don't want to talk on the phone, I mean, those are definitely the red flags.
Yeah, that's so true. Such a good point. Well, look, I only have a minute left. The best way to get information, to maybe read a little bit more about this or learn how to safeguard yourself, is there a resource you want to recommend?
Absolutely. Go to BBB.org. Up at the top of the page, there's a button that says Scam Tracker. and you can go to Scam Tracker. You can look up a scam. You can report a scam. It is quite a rabbit hole. Once you start reading the romance scams, your heart breaks for people. Yeah. But it's just, I feel like, you know, it's very important to report the romance scams, because what we've seen is it's the same MO over and over and over again. So it's really important to get that information to people so that when they are looking for love online and they do come across something, if they go to search Scam Tracker, they'll see those details and go, you know what, that's not a real person, then they'll move on.
Well, thanks for the cautionary tales and for the effort you're doing to safeguard people. I'm grateful for it, Melanie. It's always good to have you here. And again, people can check you out at the Better Business Bureau. Melanie McGovern is Director of Public Relations and Social Media for that group. And check them out at bbb.org. Hey, have a happy Valentine's Day, Melanie.
Thank you. You too.
All right, have a great one. It is just about bottom of the hour, and I need to take a short pause. When we come back, Eric Scheidler is going to be stopping by. We'll get him on air with us. We've got a lot to get into, a lot of news now unfolding. Also, a little bit later, we'll take a look at, infidelity. We'll take a look at ways to safeguard yourself against that this time of year. It's also difficult. It's a hard time of year for many people. I mean, it's a time of great joy and bliss, but also a time a lot of people are wounded, and those wounds somehow get torn open once again. But we got a lot to talk about today. Stay with me. I'll be back with more right after this.
Getting you connected.
The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio. This is the Drew Mariani Show.
Hey, looking for a new job? How about one that offers opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Trying to stay up on the headlines? The Drew Mariani Show is here for you.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's good to be with you. The Chapel of Divine Mercy is probably about 28 minutes away. If you want to get in and join the conversation, the number is 888-914-9149. There is a federal judge in Washington, D.C. who believes she's found a way around the Dobbs decision. Her name is Judge Colleen Collar-Codley. And she said the decision only cited that the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, even though Justice Samuel Alito said numerous times there is no right to abortion to be found anywhere in the Constitution. But apparently, to her, she claims that perhaps the 13th Amendment, the one that prohibits slavery and indentured servitude, well, that could contain a right to abortion. And she's ordered lawyers in a pro-life case before her to prepare arguments on that idea. And to me, this is the strangest thing in the world. Why is it so strange? You cannot let this go. I see so deeply rooted in this, the demonic. The tentacles have run so deep. It's like a cancer, right? With all these tentacles deep into the brain. And it's so hard to extricate it. She's not the only one looking for a way around Dobbs. Ever since the fall of Roe, especially with a number of states simply outlawing abortion, Planned Parenthood, and their allies in the government, they've been looking for ways to get around the prohibitions. One of the ways that they're doing this is through the use of an abortion drug. Eric Scheidler's going to be joining me in a minute. I want to talk to him about it. This is so nefarious, and actually probably even worse. The collateral damage from this, I don't think is getting enough attention. And we'll talk about that with Eric coming up. The FDA's approved a scheme to allow big pharmacies right now to sell the drug. Up until now, it could only be given out, by doctor's offices or by a couple of compounding pharmacies. Now the FDA is allowing Walgreens. I don't want to use Walgreens again if they start doing this. I'll boycott them. Rite Aid, CVS, these major, major chains, to sell them after they go through some kind of approval process. I'm not quite sure what that is. But look, this is, again, just feeding that culture of death. A number of groups have brought a suit against the FDA for approving the drug because of how deadly it is, not just for babies in the womb, but also for the mothers themselves. And there are concerns also that have been raised about drug traffickers selling counterfeit abortion drugs, and those can do some real damage. So it's just so dark, and it's so nefarious, so evil, so horrible. I mean, I don't have the words for it. But here's where we are. I was talking off air with the executive director of the Pro-Life Action League, Eric Scheidler, before he walked in the studio, and he says, Drew, I kind of have a theory, and I want him to pick up on this. I think it was a very telling insight. I wonder with the fall of Roe, when that Dobbs decision came by, that Satan was willing to let that go because he had a bigger plan. And Eric joins me today. He was actually leading a protest at the Walgreens World Headquarters, located about 5 miles, actually, believe it or not, from our studios here. And I hope you'll check out his website. Grab a pen and paper. I'll give it to you a few times. It's called prolifeaction.org. Good to have you in studio with me, Eric. Thank you for your time.
It's great to be with you, Drew. You know, we had a really fantastic event out there. We had speakers from Students for Life, from the Archdiocese of Chicago, from Illinois Right to Life, even from a pro-life group down in Texas who joined us, Pastor Mark. And we heard from a woman who had actually gone through a medical abortion, chemical abortion. It's got a lot of different names. And I think that's kind of part of the scheme here is it's hard to get your fingers around something that's called so many different things. There's so much confusion. Some people confuse this drug with a plan B and some of the emergency contraceptive pills that can potentially be causing early abortion, though that's not their primary use. We're talking here about RU486. This was a drug that was specifically designed by a French pharmaceutical company to kill an unborn child. It's marketed under the brand name Mifeprex. The generic name is Mifepristone. And a woman, it takes this pill, and it causes her body to stop making progesterone. Progesterone is a hormone that makes her body a place where an unborn baby can live. It makes her uterus become a very nourishing and welcoming environment for an unborn baby. And when you take progesterone away, that uterus becomes a hostile environment. The unborn baby is killed. It's sloughed off from the lining of the uterus. And then a day or two later, the woman takes another pill called misoprostol, which is a legitimate anti-ulcer drug. And so it's available already in all American pharmacies. And then she takes that drug, which causes these heavy, heavy uterine contractions. But what you don't hear about, you can find out at Planned Parenthood's website. What you don't hear about is the excruciating experience that a medication abortion, also known as a chemical abortion or a medical abortion, actually is like. The hemorrhaging. This woman today who spoke about her abortion talked about blood clots the size of her fist coming out of her body all day long as she's going through this experience. And no one, her family doesn't know, her mother doesn't know. She's going through this all by herself. It's an incredibly painful experience, and it's an incredibly isolating experience because you are alone when you have this abortion. Mm-hmm. You know, abortions used to take place in abortion facilities, but more than half of them now take place somewhere else. It could be your kitchen floor as you're making dinner and you used to have the abortion then. It could be the bathroom at your high school or college. It could be the mall. It could be where you have your abortion, where the hemorrhaging begins. It's an excruciatingly lonely experience and painful experience, and women just don't know how horrible these abortions are.
To that point, I want to pick up. You bring up so many great points here. I never thought about that. I mean, as horrific as an abortion is, any woman, and there are many who are listening right now who've been through it, and I'm sorry for your pain and for your loss. And I'm grateful that you're tuned into this. At least when you're in that process, there's somebody there at least holding your hand or saying, hey, it's going to be okay. You're doing the right thing. There's somebody there with you. But you're right. The isolation of taking this pill, thinking, oh, it's going to solve the issue, and then having the residual side effects, blood clots the size of your fist, the agony that comes with that, even the potential, you know, complications and death. I never thought of it that way, but it's almost a very different thing, isn't it?
It is psychologically. And, you know, the woman is the one who ingests the pill herself. So she becomes the actor in the abortion, as opposed to the, you know, surgeon who's simply using the scalpel. She becomes much more complicit in it than with a surgical abortion. You know, at first I thought, well, Americans are going to see this. They're going to think, well, popping a pill is easier than getting surgery, and this will be very attractive.
That's what I thought. But I thought, you know, most people are going to think, oh, you know, it's not like going in and having your legs in a stirrup and having the child cut up and extracted from you.
And they've been trying to market the abortion pill as a kind of period resumption medicine, you know, which was the code language they used to use back in the day when they were trying to, you know, sell abortion concoctions like Lysol. Lysol disinfectant in an earlier formula was used as an abortion medicine, abortion chemical. And if you look at early Lysol ads, they, in a veiled way, they talk about, you know, getting things back to normal.
Oh, wow.
And they're trying to get you to use it as an abortifacient chemical. So we're seeing kind of some of the, it's almost like we're back to the old days in a way where we're using poisons to kill these babies. And women become much more complicit in the abortion and much more wounded from the abortion experience.
Yeah, it's so true. You know, you said something before we had the conversation in the studio, and I always like to look at things from a spiritual perspective. And clearly, I believe that the demon that, you know, was in Aztec Mexico when human sacrifice was taking place and Our Lady came, you know, ultimately vanquished, you know, that practice. I think she's going to be critical in this process. But you said to me, you said, you know, it's almost that battle over Roe. Roe fell. It's almost like Satan said, okay, yeah, I got something that's going to be even better.
Yeah, you're familiar with the concept of a feint or a gambit in chess, where you lose a piece on purpose because you can see seven moves ahead of your opponent and you know this is going to help you in the end. So here we have Roe v. Wade is overturned, and immediately the media goes into overtime for the abortion industry. Planned Parenthood sends their propagandists out, and soon we have the American people turning against pro-life movement like never before, going so far as to, in Montana, to vote out a referendum that would have required a baby that survives an abortion procedure to be given extra help. The American people have lost trust in the pro-life movement under the constant rain of propaganda. The lies about women not getting care for ectopic pregnancies or for other conditions like that, lies about what our abortion laws actually say, lies about the provision that we make for women to help them in states where abortion has been banned. And so we have a tremendous amount of rebuilding to do, but here we are with an abortion drug that can be easily trafficked over state lines, easily slipped into a girlfriend's drink.
Oh, yeah.
We are going to hear horror stories over the coming years.
That's so true.
Of this kind of thing, of women who lose babies they wanted because the father didn't want them and he was able to get one of these drugs through this increasingly slipshod process of distributing them willy-nilly.
I can see young girls in high school. I could see people being trafficked. I mean, you could see nefarious, evil boyfriends saying, okay.
It's happened.
You know, yeah, we'll have the baby, and all of a sudden she loses it. Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Oh, my gosh. You talk about a darkness and an evil. It's so true. So you went outside of Walgreens. I know Walgreens, CVS, Rite Aid, these companies are going to be making this available. And I just think, hey, you can't in some high schools today give a kid an aspirin, right, without their parents' attention. But you can go ahead and prescribe something as horrible as this, or a girl can go in and get it. What happened today? Tell me about what's going on at Walgreens. You were at their national headquarters. Tell me about the protest and how they're responding to all this.
Yeah, well, there's a group called Progressive Anti-Abortion Uprising, POW is what they go by. And they're the ones who first really sounded the alarm on this and called for nationwide protests. And we immediately joined in with them at the Pro-Life Action League to bring our expertise in running these kind of nationwide events. So on the 4th of February, we held protests at Walgreens and CVS and Rite Aid locations, over 100 of them all over the country, calling on these companies to rescind their plan. Wow. And, you know, part of what we're trying to do is send a signal to other big pharmacy chains. You know, Walmart operates a lot of pharmacies, Mariano's and others.
Yeah.
So we hope that our message, sort of subtextual message to them, will be don't bring this same, you know, crisis to your own company.
Amen.
Where your customers are showing up and protesting outside the local pharmacy instead of going inside to buy, you know, distilled water for their CPAP machine or M&Ms for Valentine's Day.
Yeah. So sure. My guest today is Eric Scheidler. If you want to join us, let me open the phones too. You can get in. I only have maybe another 10 minutes. The number here is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. He is the executive director of the Pro-Life Action League. Check him out at prolifeaction.org. That's their website. They're a nonprofit. They can always use your help on the front lines of trying to make a difference. Daniel in Sacramento, California. Good afternoon. You are on the air with Eric.
God bless you guys. God bless you, Drew. You're always keeping us informed. But the one thing I want to say about this, which is really what I found out about it, which is horrendous, these poor women, they're delivering these babies, and sometimes they're alive.
Mm-hmm.
And then what they're doing, and then they're flushing them down the toilet.
Oh, boy.
So it's really horrendous what's going on with this drug. It's just unbelievable.
That's one of the biggest problems with medication abortion. What do you do with the body? You know, it's supposed to be just like a heavy period, but often enough, the woman can see the tiny embryo or fetus in her sanitary pad or in the toilet. Sometimes the baby survives. Maybe the mifepristone wasn't strong enough, or her body didn't react with it the right way or the wrong way. I mean, how do you even talk about a drug designed to kill? And what do you then do? Do you call up the coroner? Do you call the police? Women are wondering. They call the pregnancy centers even, the pro-life pregnancy center. What do I do with this body. Yeah. Some of them are burying these tiny, tiny little corpses in the backyard. They just don't know what to do with it. It's an incredibly traumatizing experience.
I just can't imagine, as we talked about, the PTSD that's going to cover in this. Mm-hmm. You're very familiar with abortion. Any woman who's had abortion, the damage that not only comes from that physically but psychologically. You know, we see the codependencies, the addictions, the suicidal ideations, the depression, the anxiety. I mean, all the bouts of tears. I mean, all these different things. And I really think we're going to see more of that than ever. To your point, because it's so isolated, you're so complicit in the act yourself, and then you've got to deal with the residual on top of it. I mean, this is uglier. It's all ugly. I got to be careful how I say this, but in a very veiled and cloaked way. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a whitewashed tomb, and the outside of it says, no, this is easy. This is the way to go. But boy, it's so corrupt and dead on the inside. It's
horrible. You know, we're told that abortion is something women need in order to enjoy the blessings of liberty. But in actual fact, every step of the way, the more that abortion expands, the more that women are made victims of it. We are telling women in the first place, you can't live a full life in our society unless, like a man, you can always avoid the consequences of sex. You can always avoid a pregnancy.
Right.
You have to change your life around. You have to get an abortion to work at Amazon and stay on the factory floor. And they'll even pay for your abortion over there at Amazon. They won't pay for your child care. Well, Amazon will send you across state lines for an abortion. But they won't provide, you know, adequate health care and on-site daycare for their employees. You know, let's at least be fair and offer the opportunity to choose life for these women.
I agree. Eric, hold the thought. I got to take a short pause. When we come back, if you want to join us, I'll open the phones. The number's 888-914-9149. Getting you up to speed on what's happening with your pharmacy, Walgreens and Rite Aid and CVS. And actually talking about something you're not going to hear in too many places. Talking about something that's now being promoted, I think, in a very sanitary and you know, almost clean way. But the residual damage from this, collateral damage, is going to be long felt. Our conversation will continue right after this. Stay with us. Hey, do you like Italian food? Well, you know I do. And this September, I'm heading to Italy. Why not join me where we'll dine, wine, and see the divine? I'm leading Relevant Radio's Eucharistic Pilgrimage with sponsor Nativity Pilgrimage. Seats are limited. That's relevantradio.com/Italy.
Pray, hope, and don't worry. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, coming up next.
Yeah, that's about 10 minutes away. Let's pray. You know, this is a tough conversation to have today. I just want any woman who's made the mistake, any man who's been complicit in it, to know how deep God's mercy is for you, how abundant his forgiveness is, and how much he loves you, and how there is hope, and how there is healing. If you're pregnant right now and you're thinking about maybe taking an abortifacient or having an abortion, it might be providential, maybe God's providence that you're hearing us today. And I'm very blessed to have in the studio with me today Eric Scheidler, executive director of the Pro-Life Action League. His father, Joe, you know, he was a real hero and leader in the movement for a very long time. God called him home not too long ago, and Eric has taken really the reins and is really, you know, gosh, it's almost a different fight today than it was. The movement has radically, radically changed. They were out front of Walgreens today. I want to give you a little sound of what went down today. Here's some audio from this is from Texas today, Maggie, at the Walgreens protest. Mark Lee Dixon with Students for Life. Check this out.
Yes, I travel all over Texas, but came from West Texas on this trip here to join Students for Life of America in this very important gathering outside of the headquarters of Walgreens.
Why do you think it was important to come over 1,000 miles away to come for this event?
Because we are seeing something that we've never seen in America before. That places like Walgreens and Rite Aid and CVS are being weaponized by the current administration to become abortion facilities. We knew that we had to worry about places like Planned Parenthood and Whole Woman's Health, but we never thought we had to worry about our neighborhood Walgreens. If they start distributing the abortion-inducing drugs, then I'm going to have to take my business elsewhere. That this is not something that a business like Walgreens should be involved with.
Amen to that. That was Sal today. That man, by the way, came all the way up from Texas. He joined Eric and a number of other people outside of the Walgreens National Headquarters in the state of Illinois. And Eric, I want to talk to you about that because I know that there was a decent turnout. You also, and you have to share what happened today there, because I understand that Walgreens knew you were coming. They did something to to protect their employees, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And then you also had a special card for the president. So.
Well, I noticed as I was waiting to speak at the little, kind of rally we did, that there was this no trespassing sign with very fresh looking bolts on it. And I took a closer look. It was brand spanking new. It still had the scanner sticker from the Home Depot on the pole. So they put up this brand new no trespassing sign, and the cops had come out and put no parking signs on the side streets. So it was like harder for our people to find places to park, as if we didn't know we could like walk an extra block. So you had about 80 people. It was fantastic turnout for the middle of the day.
Yeah.
It had just started drizzling as we were leaving. And we found out from a Walgreens employee who must have lived in the neighborhood, walked by and told us that they sent everybody home. They said, work from home today. There's going to be a protest. They didn't want them to see. Wow. So, of course, now they're curious about it. They might never have even noticed, but they're going to be all looking up online to see what happened at their headquarters.
Media coverage. Does the media show up for that, I hope?
We didn't have any media show. We did have one media outlet show up. I'm not sure who they were. Might have been a local paper, but I've been in touch with some reporters who wanted to get. You know, there was a horrible shooting up in Michigan, and a lot of the Chicago media went up there. Yeah. So we expect to see some media coverage. Good. But the most exciting thing that happened while we were out there, I got the idea yesterday. Oh, it's going to be Valentine's Day. Let's make a Valentine's Day card for Rosalind Brewer. She's the CEO of Walgreens. Yeah. So we made this super jumbo, gigantic greeting card. And on the front, it said, "Hey, Walgreens, it's Valentine's Day," with a big, big heart. And on the inside, it said, Valentine's Day, ... On the inside, don't break our hearts. And we had a bunch of tiny little fetus. This is kind of weird, Drew, but this is the weird stuff you do as a pro-life activist. We had like what looked like little, Valentine's Day candies with the hearts with little baby fetuses on them, sort of a cluster of them. Don't smash our little bodies with your abortion pills. And at the bottom it said, give up your plans to sell abortion drugs.
So have they committed to doing it? Is that what they're
going to
do?
They've said they're going to do it. We don't know if any of their stores have actually been licensed. I want to tell you about the rest of our card. So we tried to deliver this. We started walking up to the building, and immediately security guards swooped down on our little group of pro-lifers who were walking up to the doors, which are way back from the sidewalk. And the security guard says, you're trespassing. That's what the trespass sign was for. So we would see that. You're trespassing on Walgreens property. I want to ask you to leave. And I said, I'll leave. Would you just please take this card and give it to Roz Brewer, the CEO? I want you to leave. I want you to take my card. I want you to leave. I want you to say, he wouldn't take the card. And the other security guy wouldn't take the card. Then the Deerfield police came. They wouldn't take the card. Finally, our group, we had to turn around and go back to the sidewalk. But we tried to deliver our Valentine's Day card. Walgreens doesn't want our Valentine's Day card.
No.
They don't want our business either. They're willing to say to pro-lifers, go shop somewhere else. So we're going to.
Hey, man, I'll be with you. The second they start doing that, they're done.
Yeah.
And I think everyone should do that. I mean, I talked in the very beginning of the show about how we can sacrifice in small ways. This is a great way to do it.
It's fantastic. Walgreens, go to your local CVS. Walgreens. Tell the manager, tell the pharmacist, I'm leaving you now, and this is why. And then when you find that independent pharmacy, or maybe it's at the Mariano's or the Jewel, tell them, I'm coming here because you're not selling the abortion pill. They need to hear that. Just those few words.
Amen. I am so grateful for what you're doing. Maggie, we have time for a few calls, right? Who's up next? Who should we go to? Marnie or the doctor? Let's say, okay, Marnie in, Alaska. Palmer, Alaska. Marnie, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Hello. I'm really glad that all of you, that you're talking about this subject that you're talking about. I just want to say that. And I wanted to say Montana was mentioned earlier, and Montana had passed a bad law. But I wanted to let you know and let the whole nation know and let people know that ranked choice voting is how that law got that's how it got in. And if you could maybe have some programs about ranked choice voting so it doesn't slip into other places around the country, because it happened here in Alaska, not our town. And so that's how the person nobody wanted to get in is in now. And because it's a very, they hoodwink people with it because all their signs that they put up in our small towns, even nobody knew what it was. All it said was, you know, vote yes because you want to save your dividend or whatever.
Yeah.
And what it was, it's a hoodwink way to vote.
Marnie, first of all, thank you. And you're right. I will cover that topic for you. I think it's a great one to talk about. I have less than a minute. I'm glad you got your comment in. I want to get Dr. FP in here very quickly, too, before I run out of time. Doctor, you're on the air. Thanks for listening in Southern California.
Hi, Drew. Thank you. So my comment is with regard to your question, what does a mother do with the baby once she has a medical abortion? And the fascinating thing is that the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology had a symposium that they published in their journal 20 years ago on exactly that question. What do you do with the baby? So I'm going to give you a quote of exactly their advice.
Yeah, very quickly.
That physicians should feel free to advise patients to flush the products of conception down the toilet, end quote. Utterly barbaric, unbelievable.
Yeah. Doctor, thank you for sharing that. I wish I had more time to talk both to you and Marnie, but I am up against the clock. We'll pray the chaplet. Please check out prolifeaction.org. They're a nonprofit. Support them and pray for their efforts. Thank you, Eric.